Telling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Kia ora, Kirsten. How are you?
I'm good. Good.
That's good to hear.
Lovely morning.
Yeah, it's beautiful outside. We're about to talk blues, aren't we, this morning?
Well, it turns out the blues aren't all sad.
Yeah.
I don't know why it has that reputation, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess a lot of people sort of associate it with sitting down and airing out your grievances
a
little
bit.
Yeah, I
mean, there is an element of that, and it was absolutely born out of poverty. But it's, you know, party music, and it's kind of celebration sometimes, you know. And, well, actually, one of the things that I guess will come up today is there's a difference between what they did live and what they recorded.
There we go.
Might have done, you know, whatever tunes are happening. And so, like, our first guy we're doing this morning, Robert Johnson, apparently, you know, he did write songs, but he would play, you know, everything and anything.
Right.
And he was not famous in his lifetime and would just play on street corners and outside barbershops. And he was a wanderer, you know, that iconic, he just went from town to town. He was born in Mississippi, lived in Memphis, and died very young. He was like in his 20s.
Wow.
Of mysterious circumstances.
Ooh.
They still don't know how he died.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they don't. Well, it could be syphilis. It could be poisoning by one of his mistress's husbands.
Damn.
But some people think it was Satan taking his toll. Because we're going to play one of his famous songs, which is about going down to the crossroads and selling your soul to the devil.
Hello there, I'm John Peel, and you're listening to The Devil's Music.
I went to the crossroads, fell down on my knees.
He got down on his knees to ask for talent, for guitar playing talent.
This is quite the, like, legendary tale now, Robert Johnson and the devil.
Well, yeah, and that whole notion of rock music being satanic or sinful. You know, and so, God, the legend attached to him. So apparently there's two or three crossroads that you can go to, because I'm not sure which one it was.
All of them.
To pay
homage to Robert
Johnson.
That's
right, because he certainly did have amazing talent.
So what is the story of Robert Johnson and the devil for people who might not know it?
Well, so in the song, it talks about you go to the crossroads and you meet Satan, and he offers you a bargain with this talent, but in return, he has your soul. And I think then him dying so young.
And he was mythology. An amazing talent as well.
And he just died by the side of the road. They found his body, and that's why they're still not exactly sure
what happened.
Is there a film or a movie?
There was a documentary that came out about a year ago, I think.
Yeah.
That a lot of people
and he's
seen.
Had a couple waves of popularity, so he wasn't that popular in his lifetime. He only recorded 24 songs.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and but he's had bursts of popularity because he's iconically loved by people like Bob Dylan, Keith Richards, Robert Plant, Eric Clapton. So that whole British sort of rock and blues in the 60s, they went and dug up the blues as the roots to rock and roll. So they weren't just taking on rock and roll. They went and found the roots. And so this is from 1937.
This is someone's texted in about that Netflix doco as well. They can't remember the name. I'll Google it. We'll find it out. Paul's texted in to say, to me, the blues and metal are both paradoxically mood lifters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it might be called, is it called Crossroads?
Maybe. Where's Google it?
But so, you know, if you want to play well, and if you want success, you can offer your soul to the devil. I read this other thing that it wasn't the devil, it was Legba, which is an African sort of god. And so this area, the Delta, this is Delta Blues, and it's an area, River Delta, with the Mississippi River, where a couple of other rivers join it, in Mississippi. And this was so funny, on Wikipedia, it said the region is known for fertile soil, you know, because of the rivers, and poverty, which seems a weird combo. You'd think fertile soil. But so there's a lot of African American workers, sharecroppers, you know, immediate slave descendants.
Yeah.
Terrible racism and Jim Crow laws. It was horrendous. And so this area was this real mix for the traveling troubadours and musicians to come across and visit the farmers and hold some parties for them. And you know, so they did talk about love and life and loss and poverty. But it was also, you know, bringing some joy to have some great music.
If anyone wants to watch that Netflix documentary, it's called Remastered Devil at the Crossroads, and it's about Robert Johnson and Robert Johnson's legacy. And Big C has texted in to say some say Bob Dylan did the same deal. So,
dun, dun, dun. Well, it worked for him too. Well, in 1966, Cream covered the Crossroads song. He also wrote Sweet Home Chicago, which was a big song in the Blues Brothers, for those of you.
I love the Blues Brothers.
So you'll know Sweet Home Chicago. Okay, this is Ma Rainey.
What a voice.
This is Call Me Anything, but Call Me.
It's funny
mood.
With this music, because I'm not sure that I necessarily would, like, think of it to turn it on myself, but I do thoroughly enjoy it. You know?
Well, and I think it's become music for musicians.
Yeah.
Because they can hear the roots of all their music. You know, it's the direct, you know, parents of rock and roll.
Mm.
And then, you know, came back in directly in the 60s with musicians that listened to it. And so I think, yeah, guitar players, you know, rockers who are searching out.
So this is like a predominantly a black genre of music as well.
Absolutely.
Comes out of poverty, comes out of slavery, comes out of that, as you were saying, immediate generation of descendants as well, who you know, first out of slavery.
Well, yeah, Ma Rainey was born in 1886.
Wow.
I mean, so you know, just direct descendant of slaves. And so there were women in the blues, you know, it wasn't completely male-dominated.
Mm-hmm.
And I read this great paper that was saying, in the blues, you got that back and forth. You know, women singing songs about my man's no good and my man takes my money and he cheats on me. And then you had men singing the songs. Whereas when rock and roll and then rock took it, you only got the man's voice.
Mm.
And that's where it sort of became misogynist because you weren't ever getting
the
talking back.
Yeah.
Now, Ma Rainey was possibly bisexual. There's a lot of sort of queer inferences in her songs. It's just she's put up in a lot of lists of great queer musicians. And she was a mentor to Bessie Smith, who was a known bisexual. And so she's sort of a queer icon. And
cool.
Her outfits, those sparkly sort of flapper dresses and the little hair pieces. Baby, I
rocked Esther. She's just like...
And she's a big lady.
Amazing.
And she was called Ma because her husband was Pa. He was Pa Rainey.
That makes sense.
And she's the mother of the blues. Or Empress of the Blues, I've heard her called.
Oh, this sounds cool
Empress
as well.
If
you wanted to watch another good documentary, someone suggested there was a recent documentary on the Native American Indian influences on the blues, which has got Link Wray and others talking about the rhythmic meter coming from Native American culture, not African. So there's different...
Yeah, I've watched that. It's amazing. And Charlie Patton is supposedly Native as well. And him and Robert Johnson hung out and mutually influenced each other. So, yeah, it's possibly just such a real roots music, you know, having this Native American influence in it as well.
And it is.
It's a great doco.
It's a truly, like, American genre that then, as you were just saying, got absolutely borrowed, nicked by the British when they sort of made rock and roll.
I mean, it was out of homage and love. But,
totally.
Yeah, you know, they sort of didn't realize what, you know, that they might be taking something from it. And then there was a couple of ethnomusicologists, the Lomaxes, John Lomax and Alan Lomax, that went and recorded a lot of the blues guys in the 30s and 40s. And all that music was deposited at the Smithsonian Institution. And they had Smithsonian records. And so they captured a lot of that. Johnson had passed by the time they were going down there.
On their mission. Someone's just texted in as well about amazing women in blues. You can't go past Big Mama Thornton either.
Yep.
Yeah, another legend.
Yeah, so all that early rock and roll, those ladies were all blues ladies.
Mm. I'm going to hit this last one here.
So what happened then? This is now.
Production's a bit different on this.
20, 30 years later, and this is Chicago blues. So there was, it's called the Great Migration. A lot of African Americans in the South migrated up to the North for supposedly less racism. Let's say less overt racism.
Yeah.
Less to your face racism. Less signs that say, you know, blacks allowed. And you get this more urban black community in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So this is Howlin' Wolf, best name ever. And so, yeah, it is more electric. It's, you know, it's urban. It's got more of a band rather than, like, just guitar.
Yeah. The washboard sound as well in a lot of Howlin' Wolf tracks.
And he
not
was,
in this one,
he was a huge influence on Chuck Berry, the Rolling Stones. He actually was signed to Chess Records and wrote songs for them.
Mm.
So he did have success in his lifetime.
The Rolling Stones, like, they basically put out a blues record.
Yeah.
High Tide and Green Grass was more or less.
But you can hear Mick Jagger in this voice.
Yeah, you can just imagine a little Mick Jagger sitting in his bedroom with his Howlin' Wolf records being like, I want to do that one day.
And that's supposedly how Keith and Mick met. They were like on a bus and one of them had just bought some records and they're like, oh, you like that too, and you know. And I mean, they have tried to honor some of the blues musicians that were still around and, you know, interact with them and bring them on stage. You know, they understand that the weirdness of, you know, I don't think it's the racism of the artists, it's the audiences. You know, so they understand that weirdness that they're playing this music that they copied and they get successful.
Yeah.
And the original artists, not so much.
So they have made a real effort to try
But I mean,
somebody's texted in. Someone listened to Kokomo Arnold's song The Twelves from 1936 and tell me it isn't the first rock and roll song.
Okay.
It's a big call.
Now this song, Backdoor Man, which is not a sexual innuendo. It is. It's about heading out the back door when her husband comes home.
Ooh.
And apparently, and the Doors covered it.
Okay.
They did a version. But Howlin' Wolf was also worked with Sam Phillips, you know, in that early rock and roll, you know, that discovery. And he was literally born on a cotton plantation.
So, the blues is still around. The blues has never gone away. What's it looking like in a contemporary sense?
I mean, people will still go hear blues artists. People will still play blues. It's not going to get you a chart hit.
No.
But I think as a musical exercise and interest, it still exists really strongly. And like I said before, any musician that really wants to sort of learn their history, and, you know, guitar players. And there's just some magic about the way that they sing and the rhythm, you know, that slightly off and on the beat and even sort of microtones of singing, like getting there and almost getting there, that tension and release.
Yeah.
So, it's never going to die. I mean, obviously we've layered it up with all sorts of stuff now. But I think, I think that interest, especially this sort of archival, archaeological interest, absolutely. And it's just groovy. It puts you in a space.
And then it's not necessarily like folk music, but it is still played in many ways like folk music is, where you sit around and you play the
blues.
Well,
yeah, I mean, that's what a folk music is, I guess, is comparison to a pop, in that it's not necessarily distributed by the mass media. It's passed around human to human. And that was what sort of differentiated folk from pop. You know, once it starts being marketed, it's moving out of that just community, people hanging, people playing. And, you know, people, that 12-bar blues, it's literally three chords.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you learn guitar, you can learn to play those three chords and you realize how much is built on three chords.
And also, that makes it sound easy, but it is not.
Well, no. And so all that creativity and difference and variety built on that three chords,
that's
like
the magic.
Wow.
Yeah. Kirsten, thank you very much for bringing us the blues this morning. What are we going to be talking about next week?
Oh, man, I just learned about this one. Pronk.
Pronk. Okay.
That sounds punk.
That sounds exciting.
Pronk. Best pronk. Genre name ever.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to Pronk and we'll see you next week.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
Thanks for all your time.